each and every one of us has already studied it a number of times in the past. And I decided after, in some years since I taught it before, I wanted to study it again because there's so much beauty and there's so much power and a great deal of depth in this little sefer, though. It's unbelievable. Every time I started it, you know, I never finished it. And I've been teaching it. I'm afraid to say what we might do this time around. We may very well begin, and usually I never made it through more than the first chapter or chapter and a half, but we're going to try our very best. Who wrote Sefer Rut? The Gemara says Sefer Rut was written by Shmuel, the Navi Shmuel. The Gemara says he wrote Sifro, his own Sefer. He wrote Sefer Shoftim, and he wrote Sefer Rut. That means Shmuel, and when we say that Sefer Shmuel was written by Shmuel, of course, only part of Sefer Shmuel until the point where he dies. And then it was picked up by others. So he wrote Shoftim, he wrote Shmuel, and he wrote Sefer Rut. There are many reasons that are given why he wrote Sefer Rut. Obviously, Sefer Rut is that which tells us the genealogy of David HaMelech, and who is the one that anointed David. The one who anointed David was Shmuel. But there was something very sad about that day that Shmuel anointed David. Because Shmuel saw Shaul, the first king of Israel, as his great creation. And when God tells Shmuel that I'm going to tear the kingdom away from Shaul, it says, Vayitabel Shmuel mourned all night. Here it was his first great accomplishment for Klal Yisrael. He is the one who has anointed Shaul to be king, and it fails. Shaul has the kingdom torn away from him. This is not only a failure of Shaul. Shmuel sees this as his own failure, and he's going to suffer pangs of remorse and regret his whole life, or whatever is left of his life after he anoints David. It's with great reluctance that he goes when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, take the oil of anointment and go to Beit Lechem, and you are going to anoint one of the children of Yishai to be king. It's with extreme difficulty that he does it. And really, he says, his response to God is, Eich Eilech, how can I go? V'shomar Shaul v'haraguni. And Shaul is going to hear that I've gone to anoint somebody else and he's going to kill me. It's a very fascinating pasuk that Shmuel says. It's a very fascinating request that he makes of God. We're just talking about the Rebbeinu Shel sending him. They think he's not going to take care of him. But more than that, I think that even God's response to Shmuel under those circumstances is even more fascinating. But what would you have imagined God's response to be? I would have thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would tell him, Shmuel, I'm going to be there. I'm going to take care of you. What are you worried about? But that's not God's response. God's response is, take a goat with you and tell them that you are coming in order to bring a sacrifice in Beit Lechem. You understand? It's amazing. God gives him the cover story. I'm not going to say that it's a lie, because it's turned into the truth. It's sort of stretching the truth a little bit, because he's not really going in order to bring the sacrifice in Beit Lechem. He's going to anoint the next king of Israel. But I've always said that pasuk is extremely extremely fascinating. I remember I had talked about that during the course of the first Gulf War. So you know, there were the Chachomim then. You don't need Gesnes, you don't need, I'm talking about Gulf War I, you don't need anything, all you have to have is Bitachon, just add Bitachon. So I said, take a look at this story over here. Does the Revelation tell Shmuel, just have Bitachon? God himself says, yes, you're embarking upon something that can conceivably be dangerous. Take your gez mask in your hand, make sure that you have a cheder atum beit lechem, and that way you can go. I mean, there's an extremely important lesson that is learned from the idea that God tells Shmuel, not it'll be all right. Have the token and it's okay. I'm going to be with you. Human being has to take steps to protect himself when there is the possibility of danger. You have to take real steps in order to protect yourself. And therefore, God is the one that gives him the cover and tells him, go ahead and take a goat, and you're going to go to Bethlehem, and you're going to tell people that you came in order to bring the sacrifice to God. One can also understand Shmuel's reluctance when he says, Eich Eleich, how can he go? You can understand it in the existential sense. Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I was the one who anointed Shmuel. And now you want me to go and anoint somebody else. Which is really the final indication that the first person who was ever anointed as a king of Israel has failed. And I see it as my own failure. Not only is it a failure, there was a love. The fact is that there was a love between Shmuel and Shaul. It says that after he anointed him by Yishokehu, he kissed him. And the Sephorno says in Chumash, when Moshe is on his way back to Mitzrayim in order to tell old Pharaoh, let my people go, and he meets Aaron, so it says that Aaron kissed Moshe. So the Sephorno says, Ka'odom Hanoshek Sefer Torah, like a person who kisses the Sefer Torah. You know, the Kedusha of Moshe was such that Aaron kisses him. Shmuel saw the greatness of Shaul, and Shaul, of course, had greatness. Otherwise, he would not have been chosen to be the first king of Israel. And he kissed him, and he kissed him. And here, this great love has now been dissipated. It's all gone. He's not going to be the king of Israel anymore. Anyway, Shmuel comes to Bethlehem, and it may very well be because he's not really doing this because he wishes to do it. When the oldest son of Yishai is brought to Eliyahu, he says, "I'm Neged Hashem Mishicho. This is the one who is the anointed one of God." So God says, "No." Lo Hashem Yireh Ha'Einayim, not what man sees with his eyes, because Hashem, God, sees into the heart of man. He's not the one. He goes through seven sons of Yishai, and none of them, God rejects all of them. And then it turns out, isn't there another one here? Oh yeah, we forgot, you know. There's a little one, the youngest is out with the Shepzalah. So Shmuel gives the order, bring him to me. And of course, when he arrives, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, this is the one. He anoints him, but he never kisses him. He kisses Shaul, but he doesn't kiss David. In a sense, one may say that Shmuel feels that he didn't treat David the way he should have been treated. And in a sense, he therefore writes this sefer as a dedicated to David in order to show him the love that he has for him. There may be another reason as well. And follow me through this Gemara. Follow me through this Gemara. You'll see on this side where the Mishnah is. All we need is the first line in the Mishnah to make sure. The Mishnah says, Amoni umo'ovi asudim v'sudom isur olam avon kevotehen mutarot liyat. It's the Gemara in Yevamos. There's one sheet that is a Gemara in Yevamos, and it begins with a Mishnah that says that the males from Amon umo'ov, Ammon and Moab are not permitted to enter the congregation of God. But the women of Ammon and Moab. Moabiah and Ammoniah, they are permitted into the congregation of God. Let's go to the Gemara. You see at the first of the white lines, it says Gemara. I'm taking it through the Gemara. It may look formidable. It's not so formidable. The Gemara asks, how do we know that the prohibition against Ammoni Umoavi applies only to the males and not to the females? Amar Rav Yochanan, Sir Rav Yochanan says, the Amar Krov, because the Pasuk says the following. Let me give you the background to this Pasuk. There's been a Philistine by the name of Goliath, who has for 40 days been announcing that he curses the people of God, and anybody who wants to can come out and do battle with him. Everybody's frightened and terrified, until one day this fellow David comes to visit his brothers who are in the army, and he hears the Philistine, and he decides that he's going to go out and fight him. So they bring him to Shaul, who is the king. Now, Shaul knows who David is because David has already been
playing
the harp for Shaul for a while. And it says that Shaul is the one who loves David. And then it says, The pasuk says, but Yod Shaul and David Yotzei Lekrat HaPlishti, when Shaul saw David going out toward the Plishti, Omer al Avner Sa'at Zavar, he said to Avner, commander-in-chief of the armies, Ben Mizeh Hanar, whose son is this boy, Avner? Vayomer Avner, and Avner said, Chei Nafshecha HaMelech, I swear by your life, O King Yodati, if I know who he is. What's more fascinating is, where did David begin his march out to the valley toward Goliath? From the tent of Shaul. Shaul had finally agreed to let him go out, and he put his uniform and his sword and his spear and his armor, he puts it all on him. And David tries to walk with it, and he can't do it. He takes it all off, and he says, I'm going out with my slingshot. And now as he goes out, Shaul turns to Avner and says, who's this boy? And Avner says, I swear, I don't know. So the Gemara asks, V'lo yadiyale? He didn't know who he is? What are you talking about? V'achtiv, but it says earlier, V'ye'ahavenu yod. He loved Shaul, loved David, by Yino Nose Caleb. He was the one who carried his armor. Ella, Asa Gemara explains, you know what Shaul is asking about? Shaul is asking about his father. Ben Mizeh Hanar, whose son is this lad? Arvua Kol Mashu, he's asking about the father. So the Gemara rejects that answer as well. Va'avad lo yoda, he didn't know who the father of David was. But it says about Yishai, he made Shaul, Zakim, Boban, the man in the days of Shaul was an elder who, wherever he went, there were crowds of people who went with him. Yishai was one of the outstanding personalities in Klal Yisrael. He doesn't know that this is David ben Yishai. What kind of a conversation? It's a mysterious conversation that's taking place here. Rav said, and some say it was Rabbi Abba who said, Zeh Yishai, the man who went out with many men around him, was Yishai, the father of David, Shenichnas b'chlusya, v'yotzo b'chlusya. He went out with many people, and he came in with many people. You know, great people don't go alone, you know, they have, today it's television crews with him, and guards and fellows with things sticking in their ears. You know, you don't move any place without being surrounded by all sorts of people. So now we have a problem. So we're back to our original question. What does it mean when Shaul asks Avner, who is this boy? So the Gemara says, Hachika Amar Shaul. This is what Shaul said. I know who he's David. I know he's David Ben Yishai. What I want to know is, there were two children that Judah had, the twins that were born from Tamar, Perez and Zarah. I want to know, was he born, is he from the family of Perez, or is he from the family of Zarah? The difference is the following. If he's from the family of Perez, then there's royal blood coursing through his veins, then he is a candidate to be king. And therefore he may be ultimately the one who is going to take my place. Because Perez means to breach and break through. The Gemara says, Melech Poreitz Lo Derech. A king can break through and do whatever he wants. Hachi Kama Shaul, this is what Shaul said. I want to know about this boy, Imi Perez Osi, does he come from Perez? Imi Zerach Osi, or does he come from Zerach? Imi Perez Osi, if he comes from Perez, Malkohovei, he's going to be a king. Sha'amelech Poreitz Lassos Lo Derech, because a king can break through to make a road. Ve'ein Memachin Biado, he can expropriate. Ve'ein Memachin Biado, nobody can stop him. In the Zorach also, if he comes from the family of Zorach, Chashivo Ba'al Mohavi, he's going to be a significant and important person, but not Malchus, he does not pose a threat to me. My timer, Amarle Sha'alale. Why does it occur to Shaul to tell Avner to ask about him? What is it that raises his curiosity? Why does he all of a sudden now want to know who he's come with, what family he comes from? So the Gemara says the Chitim because it says, a few psukim earlier, it says that Shaul put his uniform on David and it fit him. Shaul was Mishichbo Vamarlo Gavaro Mikolaham. Shaul was very tall. David, I don't know why, I always have the picture in my mind, and I know why I have it, of a slightly built lad, because we always have the picture in our minds of big Goliath and little David with his slingshots. See, the David is always little, and Shaul was tall. So here, this slightly built lad is the one who is able to fit into the priestly, the kingly robes of Shaul. Because it says by Yahweh, Shaul is David Mado. Shaul put on his martim, his uniform on Shaul, on David. And putting it on means kimidato, it fit him. And it says about Shaul that he was mishich my vamalo gavomi kalon, from his shoulder and above he was taller than everybody else. Now is the moment at which the conversation turns very, very bitter. Present there is Doeg Vadomi. Doeg Vadomi is one of the great warriors, the great knights of Shaul. Gemara says also that Doeg Vadomi was a great Talmid Chacham, a member of the Sanhedrin. Amale Doeg Vadomi. Doeg Vadomi said, "Achat Hamashal Olav." While you're asking in Hogan Hula Malchut in Love whether he is fit to be king or not, you know what I suggest you do? Find out if he's Jewish. Sha'al Olav, ask about him in Roy Lovel Bikol, if he is fit to come into the congregation of God in love. Not a question of whether David can be king or not. Is he Jewish? Why? Because he comes from Rut Hamoaviyah. He comes from Rut Hamoaviyah. Because my time, why? Because he comes from Rut Hamoaviyah. Only Avner. So Avner says, Tanena, but we learned Ammoni below Moavid. Ammonit. Moavi below Moavid. The Torah says, an Ammoni and a Moavi may not come into the congregation of God. Which means the male, Ammoni, velo Ammonit, Moavi, velo Moavit. So the Gemara says, oh, wait a minute, it says a manzer may not come into the congregation of God. Are you also going to say over there, a male manzer, but not a female Manzer. Manzer below Manzera. Obviously, that's absolutely ridiculous. So the Gemara says, Ketiv Mumzar. Manzer is not a generic term. It's not a noun. If it would be a noun, then it would be a male noun. Therefore, we could say Manzer, but not Manzer. He says Manzer is a description. It's a tar, it's an adjective. Mumzar, he has the blemish of being a stranger. That term, that description, can apply to male and female, because it's not a noun. So then the Gemara asks, what about mitzvah below mitzvahs? It says a mitzvah shall not come to the congregation of God, are we going to say, but not a mitzvah? A female, there's no such halacha. So he said, the Gemara says, shami hafi. Here it's different. With regard to Ammoni and Moavi, it's different. Because the Torah clearly told us why Ammoni and Moavi are not permitted into the congregation of God. Shami hafi, here it's different than the Forish time of the club, because the Pasuk gives us the reason. Why did we reject forever? Why did God reject forever Ammon and Moab becoming part of the Jewish people? Because it says, as you were going through the desert and you came near their company, they didn't go out toward you with bread and water. Ammon and Moab came from Lot. Lot owed his very existence to Avraham Avinu. Lot is captured by the four kings. Who goes out on that great midnight ride? It's Avraham Avinu who risks his life in order to save Lot and his family. Why was Lot saved from Sodom while everybody else was destroyed? Because who saved the Avraham, the source of Avraham? Ammon and Moab lived because of the source of Avraham Avinu. The least that they could have done for their cousins, who have been wandering now for 39 years in the desert. You don't have to come out with flowers, but they could have offered bread and water. And because of their ingratitude, they are rejected. So the Gemara is going to say, who is it that goes out toward a warring army? The males, not the females. That's not a woman's place to go out. Go out to meet a camp of warriors that are on their way elsewhere. So it says they were rejected because Allah shall kid Welskan Balechem Balechem Bamayim Darko shall Ishla Kadem below Darko shall Ishla Kadem. It's the way of a man to go out to meet a warring army below Darko shall Ishla Kadem. So then the Gemara says, you know, so the men should have gone out toward the men, and the women should have gone out toward the women. So Avner ben Ner remained silent before the intellectual onslaught of Doeg Ha'adomi. This is the conversation that was taking place in the presence of Shaul. So then Shaul asks, oh, Vayomar HaMelech, the king said, Sha'alam top ben Mizahalam, ask whose son is this boy? So the Gemara says, earlier he was called Nar, and here he's called Elen. Why is he called Elen now? So he says, because the word Elen also means something that's hidden and concealed. There's a halacha here, nit alma halacha. There is a halacha that has been forgotten. Say, Usha'al de Bet HaMedrash. Shaul says, go ask in the Beth HaMedrash, what's the halacha of David? Shaul, Avner went and he asked, Amrulay, so they told him, Ammoni below Ammonit, Moavi below Moavit. David, next page, and really on the next page, all we have to, line four, Doi Vadoi still was not convinced. So Amosa ben Yeter, one of the great heroes of the house of Shaul and then David, he said, Melame Shechog Acharbo, Ki Yishmaeli, put on a sword like a Yishmaeli, and he said, Kol mi she'ino shemei halacha su, whoever does not hear this halacha, yidoker b'cherev, will be run through with a sword. Kach mekoblani mibeit dino shel Shmuel haramati. This is what I have received as the halacha from the Beit Din of Shmuel. Amoni v'lo amonit, Moavi v'lo Moavit. That's all we need. What's taking place over here is that there was a halacha, and the halacha was given at Sinai. Most probably the halacha was not commonly known, because there were not many instances, or for that matter, they may not have been, most probably there have been no instances whatsoever of an Ammoni or a Moavi woman who came to become part of the Jewish people. So we're talking about a halacha that had not been relevant, most probably for 350 years. And it was not a halacha that stated clearly in Torah. It was a halacha of Moshe Yisrael. It was called that Moshe, it's part of the Torah Shabbat Ped. It wasn't known. It wasn't known. So here they raise this question. They raise this question in the presence of Shaw. Doeg is a bitter enemy of David, a bitter enemy. And therefore he wants to make sure, we see here every day when people have enemies, what kind of tzaddas they can make, you know? We know this already. And unfortunately, it's the dark side of human nature. Doeg is bitterly opposed to David, and he therefore wants to say, what are you talking about? David is not even, he's not even Jewish. What emerges from here is, who made this halacha known? The Klal Yisrael? Beit Dino? The Beit Din of whom? Shmuel HaRamati. Because remember, he was the head of the Sanhedrin. Shmuel was the head of the Sanhedrin in his day. The entire corpus of all the law went over from one generation to the next through the Sanhedrin. So here the edict had to be issued. They had to teach Klal Yisrael the halacha. Ammoni is prohibited to come into the congregation of God and Moavi, but not the females. The Gemara later is going to say, that indeed it's not the place of women to go out toward a warring army. And
they're
not accountable, yes, because first of all, the Gemara quotes a pasuk called Kavuda Basmela Achinima, which translating, you know, a woman's place is in the home, you know, that's not too popular these days. But let's say that a woman's place is in the home when there's an army passing by. And then in Eretz Yisrael, they said, the Gemara says in Eretz Yisrael, they said, you know where we know this? The Malachim come to Avram and they ask him, Ayei Sarah Ishtecho, where is your wife Sarah? And he says, Inevo Ohel, she is in the tent. Yes? I can't hear.
Why would you not say that? Just to explain one
halacha.
What was the question?
I'll tell you the question. That's the point exactly that I'm coming to. The point that I'm coming to is, do you know what this one halacha, what hangs in the balance on this one halacha? All of Malchus being studied. All of Jewish history. More than that. Ultimately, the salvation of the world depends on it, because Mashiach is going to come from David. I saw somebody once describe this sefer as a poetic form of a tshuva, the first responsa literature in Jewish history. A shaila was asked. So Shmuel could have written a response. Hine kibalti et michtav yedidi hagoyim v'hanala sheshoal otin, who asked me such and such. Hine nilo diachar, I want to let you know that it's known from the Beis Din of Moshe Rabbeinu Lav HaYom HaZeh, Ammoni v'lo Ammonis, Moav v'lo Moav. Shmuel wanted to make sure that this halacha was so well established by Klal Yisrael. And the beauty of the background of David HaMelech, what his bubba Ruth was, and in a sense he owed it to him because he hadn't kissed him. The kiss of Shmuel HaMelech, Shmuel HaNavi to David HaMelech is in Sefer Ruth. Sefer Ruth. You can't ask the question you're asking because the fact is we know that Shmuel wrote the Sefer. So what? The question was, he had to write a Sefer, all he could have said is, I'm on with all my others, I'm on with all my others. The beauty and the power of Sefer Ruth is Shmuel's gift to a David, whom he may very well have anointed with some kind of a sense of unhappiness. He wants to make it up to David. He wants to show him his love for David. That's what he wants to show him. So that this is the first responsive literature in all of Jewish history. What a beautiful way to write a tshuva. By the way, I can show you tshuvas that were written 1,000 years ago. They were written in poetry form. Would you ask about a tshuva that was written by a rishon in poetry form? Why does he give me all this poetry, shvavetry? Let him just write Osra Mutter. Huh?
In the next section,
then why was Megillah chosen to be put into the Torah? One has nothing to do with it. It was written by a Navi. It was written by a Navi. That's number one. And number two, Nevuah shechutz v'chol adoros, the Gemara says, a Nevuah that's necessary for all generations became part of the Tanakh. We're talking about here about the legitimacy of Malchus Beis David, the legitimacy of Mashiach. I can't think of anything that might be more important to the Jewish people and the world than establishing that legitimacy. What's the problem? So we benefited with a beautiful Sefer. That's what we got. We got a beautiful Sefer. What a beautiful way to write a tshuva. What a beautiful way to write a halacha. Do you know, in the 9th and 10th century, you know, it was common, and we still have a great deal of it. That was a period of time, that was about 200 years, where the Dolei Yisrael were writing lists of the 613 mitzvahs. Which ones do apply, which ones are considered mitzvahs, which are not, and there are all sorts of differences of opinion between the Rambam, the Ramban, the Sar, the Smart, the Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, the Smart, Sefer Mitzvahs Gadol, and many of them, especially when you come to Shavuos, you know how they wrote their lists? In poetry. Lines of poetry that give you all 613 mitzvahs. If you ever learn I think one of these days, I always say one of these days I'm going to teach it. There is piyut to be said on Shabbos HaGadol. The piyut of Shabbos HaGadol is absolutely amazing. All of Hilchot Pesach in poetry. It's so gorgeous. How to cash in a stove in poetry, I understand. Yeah, well, Shkani Vedaber al Shira Hilchatit. Lo Shira Shihatit. By the way, the truth is that you are right too. There are halachas that we learn from Shiras Moshe, Oz Yoshin Moshe. Zeke Levan Veil, Ke Ovi Baromenu. We learn the halacha that you have to beautify a mitzvah. Ab Yabor Am Hashem, Akam Rams of Kanisa. Kedusha Rishonu, Kedusha Shlia, Yoshua entering Eretz Yisrael, Ezra Nechemia. They are learned in poetry. All right. So number one, Shmuel is the one who wrote the Sefer. Shmuel wrote the Sefer as a song of his love to David HaMelech, because he knows that he had not anointed him with the same love that he had anointed. Shovel. All right. Let's begin the Sefer. By Yehimei Shvot HaShoftim. We will yet talk, of course, about why it's read on Shavuot. But by he may show ourselves that in the came of the days when the judges judged by the law of God, it was the famine in the land. By the location of Bethlehem Yehuda, and a man went from Bethlehem in Yehuda, Lord, his fame off to live in the fields of Moab, hoping he should know Shnebanov, he and his wife and his two sons. Hashem Barish Elimelech, the name of the man was Elimelech, and what name of his wife was she? Ishto, his wife's name was Naomi. Hashem Shnebanov, and the names of his two sons, Machon, the Chilion, Ephratim. The word Ephratim means either because they came from Ephrat, because the Torah says Ephrat hi Beit Lachem. Bethlehem had the name Ephrat as well, and they had come from Bethlehem, so they were Ephrashims. Ephrat. Or the word Ephratim also means people of substance and significance and importance. So these were important people from Bethlehem, Yehuda, Vayavo, Stay, Moab, and they came to the field of Moab, Ayim, Shon, they were there. I wonder, why do there have to be two psukim to tell us this story? Why does the first pasuk tell us a man and his wife and two children left? And only in the second pasuk are we told their identity. The first pasuk could have said Elimelech and Naomi and Nachum and Chilion left Bethlehem, and they went to stay in Moab. Wouldn't that have been simpler? I have a feeling that the purpose of this passage is to tell us not many people left Eretz Yisrael at the time of that great famine. For that matter, there was only one man who left. A man. One man. If the pasuk would have told us the name immediately when they went, then maybe others went. No. There's a certain mystery that is created by the first pasuk. A man, his wife, and his two sons. Who is the man? One man. One man left with his family. One man. Man's name is Elimelech, his wife is Naomi, two sons are Machlon and Chilion. Obviously, what else does the pasuk tell us? The pasuk tells us that the one who initiated this all was Elimelech. His wife and children are the ones who would go along with him. It may very well be that there was serious disagreement in the house until Naomi agreed to go along with him. First of all, Hanoshim Mechavos is Oretz, women love Eretz, so she wanted to leave Bethlehem. She didn't want to leave Bethlehem. If by the end of this chapter, after all those years and all of the suffering, she's left without her husband, without her two children, with nothing, she still wants to go to Bethlehem, to a Bethlehem that is not going to come out and welcome her with flowers when she returns. Because they remember that she betrayed them and she jumped ship at a moment of great crisis for Bethlehem. But Bethlehem for her was home. One thing that can be said in to mitigate a little bit the extent of what they did, the terrible thing that they did is, throughout this sefer, Moab is always going to be referred to as Sdei Moab, the field of Moab. And the only other significant location that is mentioned is Bet Lech. Sodeh, Bayit. Lechem is going to come. Sodeh and Bayit. There's a big difference between a field and a house. In a sense, what it's doing is leaving with us the impression that how good it is out, it's in Moab. Moab is a field. It's a place of a temporary nature for the Jew. The Bayit is Eretz Yisrael. That's no more than a field. You have to watch another progression that's taking place over here. they came. First pasuk says, a man went from Bethlehem, the Lo Gur B'Shtei Moav. Lo Gur B'Shtei Moav means, what did we say in the, what did we say in the Haggadah? Harami Yovid Ovi Vayedin Itzchayma. Vayogor Sham, Vayogor Sham. Milame, this comes to tell, teach us. Shalom Yorad Yaakov Avinu Leishtakeya. He didn't go down to Mitzrayim in order to settle there. Elo Logur. Logur means to live there temporarily as a ger. Logur Borez Bonu, they tell Paro. We've come to live here temporarily. It begins, therefore, in the first pasuk, it's Sdeimo of, which in itself already is of a temporary nature, and all that it says is Logur B'Shtei Moav. So there's a double temporariness about it. By the end of the second pasuk, already time has a way of changing the frame of mind of a person. Vayavo, the end of the second pasuk says Vayavo B'Shtei Moav. They came to the field of Moab, Vayihu Sham. Vayihu Sham, the Malbim says, they've settled in and they plan to stay here. I don't know, I have a feeling that the process has not ended with Vayihu Sham. Vayihu Sham represents a change in their status. In other words, they're not tourists. Now they're, I don't know, is A1?
Permanent resident.
Temporary resident. From tourist to temporary resident. And I'll tell you why I say that. Because the next clause it says, Vayomet Elimelech Ish Naomi, Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, but Tishoe and he, who Shnei Bonel, she and her two sons remained, by Yisulahem Noshim, and they took unto themselves Noshim Moaviot, Moabite women, Shem Ha'achat Orpa, V'Shem Ha'Shenit Rut, one was called Orpa, the other called Rut, Vayeshvu Sham. Vayeshvu, that I believe is the end of the process. From Logur in the first pasuk to Vayeshvu Sham in the second pasuk, and by the fourth pasuk it says Vayeshvu Sham, Ke'es Sham, Vayeshvu Sham is, as what do we have in the Torah? Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Aviv. Yaakov lived in the land where his fathers were strangers. And as Rashi brings over there, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva, Yaakov wanted to live in peace and tranquility. In other words, here it is, I'm home. Vayeshev represents the complete opposite of Ger. What is it that Avram Avinu says to the children of Chet, the sons of Chet, when he wants to buy the Maras HaMakpela, he says, Ger v'toshav anochi amachem. I am a settler and a resident. I am a stranger and a resident. And Rashi explains, I'm a stranger, and if you want to be nice, you can sell me it. And if you're not going to be nice, then I want to tell you, I'm a resident. I'm a toshav over here. And therefore, I'm going to take it because God promised this land to me. So I believe that the process has taken place over these four psukim. They come with the intention of Gur, which is tourist. Vayim Shon is, what did you say, temporary resident. And by the time we come to Vayeshvu Sham, they live there. This is already permanent resident. Vayamutu Gam Shneim, Machlon V'Chilion. Both of them died, Machlon and Chilion. And the woman remained from her two children and her husband. Nobody else is left. Why? The pasuk seems to be telling us something that is so obvious, and the pasuk has been telling us the obvious thing all along. Obviously, if they both die, what do you think the result is? That she remains alone from her husband and her two children. And when it said it in Pasuk Gimel, Vayomat Elimelech Ish Naomi, Vatishoel Hi Ushnei Bonel. Why do we have to be told this? I mean, isn't that obvious? I wonder if it's possible to say, and that we, most probably in a certain sense, have more experience with this than many other generations. It's also painful to be a survivor. The survivor asks the question, and may be pained with the question a whole lifetime, why me? Mm-hmm. It's not so simple being a survivor. We may not have understood that in generations before, but we certainly understand it now. And the Navi is very clear, the pain, there is great pain to the survivor, not only because of the loss, but for the fact that she survived. When it says that her husband died, so we know that she's in pain because her husband died. But now it says that she tried. Has it possibly occurred to her that these tragedies that are befalling her are the result of the fact that they left Eretz Yisrael at a time of crisis? Is it possible that she's thinking to herself, if I would have been stronger, if I would have said no, Elimelech, you want to go to Moab? Go to Moab yourself and send us a check once a month. You knew I would say that. She's going to get very embarrassed. I can't help it. I'm going to say it. We came out of Aliyah in 1982. We suffered terribly. Anything that can go wrong, went wrong. Lost my job, or walked out of my job. 5 teenage children, I remained, I was unemployed, walking the streets of Yerushalayim. Bought an apartment, the kaplan went bankrupt. You see? Okay, that's too damn. And I'm getting close to, my late 40s. Unemployed, and I gave up a terrific job in the United States of America. You kidding me? Great job. Great community, right? As I've quoted often, one of the Balapap a few years ago says, Rabbi, since you left, the community doubled in size. So, and my response was, and since I came to Harnof, it grew 100 times more. And he says, no, Rabbi, I didn't mean that. I mean, you set the whole... Anyway, I don't have to tell you what else is wrong. I can't tell you. Everything went wrong. Anything can go wrong went wrong. And then I was, in the middle of all of this, I was offered the top rabbinic position in the United States of America. Oh, certainly one of the top American Jewish organizations wanted me to be their candidate for this top job. And I said, yeah. And of course, I discussed it with my wife. So she says, it's a great idea. Everything's gone wrong with you, remember? A friend of mine, I think it was Rabbi Kefet, who said, God, your luck is so bad. If you'd want to go on your return, they'd cancel the flight. And that's just what I needed, isn't it? Anyway, my wife says that's a very, very good idea. I think you should take the job. Just remember to send us a check once a month. So I called and I said, take my name out. And then it's a few months later, Hashem finally decided in heaven, okay, Gold had enough. Now we're just going to take the pressure off. And then one thing started working out, the next thing started working out. But we were extremely difficult years, extremely difficult. And I know what the Yisurei Aliyah Klita are, and I can't help, I keep my mouth shut when I meet people who are here a few months and ask, how's everything going? It's great, it's perfect. And I think to myself, oh, Habibi, you don't know what's waiting for you yet. You don't know what's waiting for you. There's a certain dues that you have to pay to the world, that's the way it is. And when you're searching to go through the Yisurei, then begins the process of Kinyan, you acquire Eretz Yisrael. But I found out something that I never knew then. There is the acquisition of Eretz Yisrael by the individual. Suffer for a number of years, and then sort of the pain begins to recede. This works out and the next works out. But there's a second kinyan, there's a second acquisition of Eretz Yisrael that may be more painful than the first. Klal Yisrael's acquisition of Eretz Yisrael. As part of the Klal, we're not finished with those Yisurim by a long shot. I'm afraid that those Yisurim are going to be with us for a while to come. For a while to come. Because for Klal Yisrael to acquire Eretz Yisrael doesn't happen in 55 years. It doesn't happen in 155 years. I don't know how much longer it will take. The Rebbeinu, of course, can do all sorts of things. You know, he has the number of tricks he has up his sleeve. You have no idea. Things can, and I believe that things can change dramatically. Right now, all right, I'm going to get into some how I feel this morning with the new Palestinian government in Mashmon, a whole bunch of that. Alright, anyway, next. She's a survivor. That's the point that I want to make about Naomi. Yes? Felt herself a stranger in state Moab. She never fit in. Chazal even say that they lived Bo'orei Moab. They never found a place where to live. And even if it doesn't mean it literally, figuratively, in her mind, she simply had never made peace with the idea that she's living here. Yes?
But what Sally Mellis decided to go there, he must have known that his sons could assimilate. He had realized that. He didn't know he was going to die.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. There's grave danger for them to go out. I mean, they had a cheder over there. They had a yeshiva. What did they have? What did they have in Moab? Huh? He went along. It was all along. And we have no indication that he sent them to yeshiva in Bethlehem. We have no such indication. But the Gemara deals, in an Gemara and Medrash deal, why were they punished? They're talking about the destruction of the family. The utter destruction of the family. By the way, I think there's also something else that as we learn in the first chapter, you have to keep in mind. We're going to go through this chapter feeling the pain of Naomi. There's absolutely no way in the world that she can know that her end, in a sense, is going to be absolutely glorious. She has no way of knowing that the Yeshua Hashem is going to come, and she's going to have a Sefer Tovo with children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren being raised on her lap. She has no idea that everything is going to change and that everything is going to change because of this, quotation marks, Shiksa daughter-in-law. Because that's also going to be one of the issues that we're going to have to deal with. Did they marry them, and did they convert before they married them, or did they convert afterwards? And this is a very big question. There are so many sources on both sides, and we will point them out as we get to them. The Malbim, for example, says Pasuk Dalet. He proves that Pasuk Dalet means that they did not marry them with chuppah and kedushin as Jewish women, because it says Vayis'u lahen noshim. How does Torah talk about a man taking a woman? Ki yikach ish isha. Vayikach is how Torah would have said, or Vayikru they took. Vayisu is a term that's used a number of times in Tanakh by some of the kings with regard to their concubines, which is an indication that they married them, and they weren't, they had not undergone any kind of conversion. So that I say is a separate question that we have to deal with from a number of sources. Rashi is going to say it in Pasuk Yud Bet. We haven't arrived at the Pasuk yet, but Rashi says very clearly, Nachman b'chiyam kiddushin behen. Nachman b'chiyam did not have kiddushin. There was no real marriage. Shenoch liyot hayu, because they were goyis, v'lo nidgayu, and they were not converted. V'achshav hin boyot lidgayu. Rashi in the middle of the chapter says, now the process of geirus is as they are on their way with Naomi to Eretz Yisrael. V'achshav hin boyot lidgayu. But then, of course, Rashi also points out, we want to know a little bit more about Naomi. And the fact is, Chazal say her name was Naomi because her ways were pleasant. She was Noam. She was Ne'ima. So, let's go on over a few psukim and we'll see how it all works in. V'atokom hibachaloteha. Interesting passage. Why is this passage? By the way, every one of the psukim is interesting, so don't take me too seriously. If I say about a pasuk, it's interesting. It goes to every pasuk. V'atokom hi b'chaloteha, v'atoshak v'seimoav. She and her daughters-in-law arose, and she returned from the field of Moab. Ki shomo v'seimoav, because she heard in the fields of Moab, ki pokav Hashem et amo, that God had remembered his people, latet lahem lechem, to give them bread. Before we get back to the pasuk, I just want to go to the next pasuk. What did we learn in this pasuk? Where is she now at the end of this pasuk? Read the pasuk. Where is she now? What? Vatoshav Misteimov. She returned where? She returned to Bethlehem from Steimov. At the end, it just says she and her daughters got up and she went back from the field of Moab. Where did she went back to? She went back home. The next pasuk is starting everything all over again. Vatetzein in Hamakom Asher Haita Shama. She went out of the place where she was. Ushtei Chaloteha Ima, and her two daughters-in-law are with her. Vatelachna Baderech, and they went on the road. Lo Shuv El Eretz Yehuda, to go back to the land of Yehuda. What are you talking about? The whole journey was over in the pasuk before. She went back already. If anything, this pasuk is a repetition of the pasuk before. What's happening over here? One word in the Eben Ezra. The Eben Ezra says on the pasuk above, b'machshevet. You know what it means? Pasuk 6 is not describing what happened, but pasuk 6 is describing what's going on in her mind. From pasuk 7 and further, what will unfold before us is what she planned, what she thought about in her mind and her heart is now going to play itself out in the world of reality. In her mind, Vatokom Eve Chalotel, she and her daughters-in-law get up, and the idea of Vatokom, they went up to Eretz Yisrael. Very good, very good. Or, you don't always say, I mean, we know that in order to travel from one place to the next, you have to get up. What does it mean by talking? By talking means that in her mind, the way the other Ezra must be learning, in her mind there's tukuma. She feels like she's being raised and uplifted. In her mind's eye already, she has returned from the field of Moab. In her mind's eye, she sees herself out of this place. Because she is the survivor. And now there's the Tekuma. She sees herself going to Steimoav. Because in Steimoav, she had heard And look what is it that she heard? She heard that God had remembered his people to give them bread. It rains in Chutzlaretz. So it rains in Chutzlaretz. So you get up in the morning. So it's going to be another dull, dreary day. Right? That's what it is. It rains in Eretz Yisrael. Oh! The taxi driver will tell you. Gishmei Bracha, what are you talking about? I felt that my aliyah was complete when I was happy on a rainy day. Okay? She looks at what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. No, it's not that the famine is over. Famine isn't stam over. Rain doesn't come down stam rain. V'hoyom shomar tish, but God is going to bring rain. God brings rain, and God gives bread in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutzlaretz, it's not like that. Not like that at all. I've quoted often the Chav in one of his halachas shiurim, where Salvechik said, rain in Eretz Yisrael is a direct communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Facts. Email. Straight from the Chavanishim. So she doesn't simply hear that the famine is over. She hears that God has remembered his people to give lechem. Now, in this passage, of course, it's fascinating. Where is she? In the fields of Moab. But where is lechem? You know where lechem is? In Eretz Yisrael, in Bethlehem. The fields of Moab, the corn may be as high as a grasshopper's eye. But lechem is an Eretz Yisrael. Now watch. If this pasuk is what's going on in her mind, that's how the Ebenezer learns it. Now we begin with playing out in reality. She's now going to take the steps. That takes in Hamakon Asher Haita Shama. This phrase, every time I learn it again, there are certain phrases that grab me. This phrase grabs me. How should it have been written? What's this? She went out of the place where she was. Have you ever gone out of the place where you wasn't? Is it possible to go out of the place where you isn't? Is you is or is you ain't in a place? Where you go? So of course Rashi is going to say, as Rashi says, in Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayetze Choron. If he goes to Choron, we knew that he was in Be'er Sheva, so obviously he had to go out of Be'er Sheva. He's fleeing from before his brother. He lives in Be'er Sheva. He's not leaving any other place. The only place in the world he's leaving is Be'er Sheva in order to go to Choron. So Rashi there, the famous Rashi, Malami has come to teach us Sheyitziyas Tzadik Min Hamakom, a Tzadik leaving the place, it makes an impression. Because as long as the Tzadik is in the city, he is its beauty, he is its brilliance, he is its shine. The Tzadik leaves Pono Ziva, Pono Hadoro Zonga. Precisely the same comment. And over there Rashi says, as it says by Naomi, and here by Naomi Rashi says, Vatetzin and Hamakom, Lomamema. So Rashi is really asking the question that we've been asking. Why does it say that she left the plains? That was already said in the Pasuk before, in Pasuk 6. Lomamema, Hadi Kvarmema, it already says, Vatoshav Nisei Moav. Umehechon Toshav, where is she going to return from? In Lo Tetzin and Hamakom Shahi Sasham. In no place, no way she's getting any place unless she leaves the place where she was. Elamakid comes to teach us she sees Tzadik when I'm not gone, that Tzadik needs a place, and of course here Rashi is telling us for the first time what Naomi is. She's Tzadikis. You see us Tzadik when I'm not gone, the Kedis, it's recognizable. But also Roshan, it makes an impression. Pono Zivo, Pono Hadoro, Pono Shivcha, the shine, the beauty, the praise of the city goes with her. V'chein, v'yetze Yaakov, v'be'er Shem. I want to say something else. There's something else about this phrase. You know what else there is about this phrase? she doesn't even want to mention the name Moab anymore. Do you know what Moab now is? You know what Stay Moab is? The place where she was. She doesn't even want to think of the name Moab. The name Moab is simply ugly to her. And you see another thing. What was the... And this may be the reason why I disagree with the Malbin and the great fear interpretation after that. The Malbin said on that second passage when it says they came to Moab by Yehusham. So the Malbin says by Yehusham means that they had finally settled in and it became permanent residence. I see the opposite taking place over here. That Tetzin in Hamakom, she went out of the place. Asher Haitashama may very well be that for Naomi, it was never a place that she lived. The most that it ever was the place where she was. And therefore, the Vayiyusham or Haitashama does not indicate permanent residence, because she was never a permanent resident. She may have physically been that place, but that place was not in her. And this is the positive fact. Tate same in her makom. And that place was nothing more than a makom. It was a makom. It wasn't a place that she looked at with, oh, what a beautiful place. What a shame place. Oh, so beautiful. It was a makom. It was a place. And it was a place where she was, not a place where she lived. She went to that place, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the road to return to the land of Judah. Here is the beginning of the process, the way going back. At this point, we have to stop and consider, why indeed was a family destroyed? Why was a family destroyed? What was the outcome? So in Chazal and in the Farshim, there are all sorts of reasons that are given. I'll tell you some of them, and most probably what will be most amazing is going to be what the Rambam says. Mara says the following. Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha says, it's a Gemara in Bava Basra, and the Neiman mentioned, there's a whole Sukhi in Bava Basra that deals with El Melech, Machal, and Chima. Why were they punished? He says, Shehoi Elohim Levakei Shrachmim Al Dolam Velo Bichu. They should have asked for mercy for their generation, and they didn't. They should have been in Sfal for Chani Sfar. Shanema, and he brings a Pasek in Yishayahu, Bizakeich, when you cry out, Yatziluch ki Butzayich, you will be saved by the group, by the larger community. I sense what Yeshayahu is saying, this way Chazal says it, that as long as you are connected to it, you are plugged in to Klal Yisrael, that's going to be salvation for you too. You have to feel connected, you have to be part of the Tzibur. The Marashon, that Gemara says, Bizakeich al tzoras ha-kibbutz va-harabim, when you cry out, you care about the fact that the community is suffering. Yatziluch min ha-shamayim. If you pray for the Tzibur, heaven is going to save you. As the Gemara says, Ha-mevakeish rachmim al-chavero, if you pray for somebody else, because listen, as we were saying, a famine in Eretz Yisrael is not simply the result of some kind of meteorological. Did I kill that word? I killed it. No, 20 years here, you can't speak English anymore properly. It's not simply a a chance occurrence that there's a famine, you know, a famine. There was the Kansas Dust Bowl, who knows how many years, there's still parts of the United States that are very dry and arid. Famine in Earth's soil is a direct message from the Living Flood. So why does the Living Flood send such a message? Because it wants Jews to pray. So now they don't pray, they flee, they run away. So the Torah says they were punished because they should have. They should have prayed. The Gemara expands on this in the Bible. Tanya says, "This man she is swell shooting the tsar." So let me finish this Gemara. This man she is swell shooting the tsar when Israel is in pain. Who pidesh echad mehem? And one separates himself from the community. Boim shnei malachi ashor, his two angels come, and they place their hands on his head, and they say, this person who separated himself from the community, let him not see the consolation of the community. They will see the nechama, but he's not going to live to see it. Elavid manshash, sibu shori b'tzar, the word says, when the community is in pain, Al Yomar Adam, let not a man say, Eilek Lebeisi, I'm going to go home. I'm going to eat and drink. V'sholol Nafshi. I'm not involved. It's not my problem. V'yim Osa came. Oh, the Gemara says terrible things about somebody who does that. Elimelech Machmonim Chiyon were Porshim Min HaTzibur. They separated themselves from Klal Yisrael at a moment of great crisis. Therefore, they were destined not to see the Nechamas HaTzibur. Obviously, remember, whatever we're going to say about Elimelech, Machmonim, Chiyon, do not apply to Naomi. Naomi remains plugged in. Take a look. Ki shomo b'steymov. What did she hear in steymov? Ki pokar Hashem, as Amo God remembered his people. She feels that there always, I have friends who live in Chutz La'aretz, but you know that they are mamish connected to Eretz Yisrael. You have, of course, those who are not connected at all. They're not my friends. Because we don't have anything in common. But I have friends in Chutz La'aretz that mamish, before me, they know what's going on. They have their computers on. And they get the news. And I'm talking to them from by phone, you understand, from Eretz Yisrael. They're telling me what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, you know. Because I'll be here. I didn't listen to the news at 11 o'clock. You missed everything. I don't know. Maybe 12 o'clock news will find out that the strike is over. We should have such luck. We should have such. There could be a number of other reasons why Nachman and Chiyon, Elimelech Nachman and Chiyon were punished. Mirta Shem. Oh, sorry, not the Shavuot Adar.
No,
Next week is Yom Ha'atzmaut. There's an old school on Yom Ha'atzmaut that I can go out and meet with the family. So the following week, yes?
I have the following question. Naomi seems to be the major person in this whole story.
Who?
Naomi.
Yes? Yes?
And she's the initiator of what happens afterwards.
Yes?
When she tells Ruth what to do.
Exactly.
So how come the
Megillah
is called after
Ruth and not Naomi? That's a good question. I like that. I like that. And you know what it means? That the answer that I gave at the beginning of this year of why it's written is the answer to that question. Because Shmuel wants to tell all generations that Ruth is our good Yiddish Abel. That's the real significance of the Megillah. To let us know that Ruth is Jewish, and therefore, David is kosher and Mashiach is kosher. Very good point. I like that. Yes?
Shaul, going back to the Gemara.
Yes.
Shaul heard the conversation and he wanted to know which twin parrots are the other twin.
Parrots are sorry.
When he found out that parrots, that David came from parrots, wouldn't a person who wanted to keep his kingdom watch himself and what he did? Why, when it came to Amalek, he didn't listen to God? You know, the connection is
You're asking the question that hovers over the next 10 chapters in Sefer Shmuel, because Shaul is going to go out with a vengeance and a passion against David. And what he wants to do, he's able then, unfortunately, because of Doeg Adomi, he's able to slaughter Nov here for Han, Nov, the city of priests. And the Gemara points out, you understand? Amalek you couldn't destroy, but a Jewish city you can. The question that you ask hovers over the personality of Shaul. Well, if I'm going to get into that, we will close Sefer Rut, and because that's going into the neshama of Shaul. Shaul, the Chazal say, was tzaddik yisod olam. You know what it means? A great tzaddik can also make a mistake. The big difference is when a great tzaddik makes a mistake, it's a mistake.
Yeah, but isn't it possible, according to
Mishra,
not that he was mentally ill? I don't think Shaul deteriorating mental health.
There's no question about it that there's the Malvin describes it as melancholia. Hamachla shenikra melancholia. Yeah, but remember, Doeg Ha'adomi was the one who instigated the destruction of Nov Yer HaKohanim. And we don't know that Doeg Ha'adomi had mental illness. People become very funny when they feel that they are personally threatened. But you know, I'm always afraid. I have a certain fear and trepidation when it comes to Tanakh, and certainly Shaul is one of the difficult characters in Tanakh to deal with, and I guess especially in this country here. Well, I'll have to talk to you, otherwise, you know, everybody thinks that they can learn Tanakh in whichever way they want to, and they sometimes approach Tanakh with a less than reverent, even from fully, a less than reverent approach. But I'm saying too much right now, we'll find other ways to do it. Okay. I'm very happy to see you all.